Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, your home for discussion and analysis of Cincinnati Reds baseball all year long. Now here's your host, Chad Dotson.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio. Once again, this is episode number 172. I'm Chad Dotson, your host. With me today is your friend and mine from RedsMinorLeagues.com and oftentimes contributor to Red Leg Nation, our good buddy Doug Gray. How are you today, Doug?
I'm doing pretty good. Three days in a row of 15 hours of covering the draft. It's nice to not have to do that today, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah, it's a pretty pretty exciting time for you, but it's also, I'm sure, exhausting. My goodness.
Yes, it kicks my butt every year, but I don't know. It's worth it. So
it's fun. So let's talk about the draft. That's why we're here today. That's what we're going to focus on, because we sure don't want to talk about the Cincinnati Reds, who just lost six in a row out west. You don't want to talk about them, do you, right now?
I mean, there are plenty of worse things we could talk about, but yeah, it seems like the draft would be a much lighter, more fun subject to discuss today.
I think certainly for the Cincinnati Reds. Before we dig too deep into the draft, I do want to go ahead and right off the top, we had a question on Twitter that I want to answer, and I'll let each of you know, if you want to ask a question for us to answer on the podcast at any time, just email me at chaddotson@redlegnation.com, and we'll try to answer all the questions we get on the podcast. This is a question from Christian Sharp at CSharpMOY, and the question is, Doug, I mean, there's only one answer to this, but here's the question. Do you think there was any player drafted this year for the Reds that could compete with Billy Hamilton for being the best player in baseball?
Yes.
Get out of town. Man, what are you talking about?
I'll make it nice and easy. At some point, Billy Hamilton's going to be old. He's going to start declining at some point. Some of these guys that are drafted are 17. So when Billy Hamilton's, say, 47 years old, odds are he's going to be out of baseball. And there's probably going to be one guy from this draft that's, 38, 39 still hanging around, which technically would make him a better player, right?
Well, first of all, I don't accept your premise that Billy Hamilton's going to be finished at age 47. He won't even be slowing down yet by then. Okay, maybe you're right. So the answer is yes, there may be one player in this draft. We're not going to say who it is, but there may be one player better than Billy Hamilton.
Well, let's hope that it's at least one of the guys that we selected, if there's going to be one.
Yeah, let's hope it's a future Red. So the Major League Baseball draft was this week, and it's always an interesting process for Reds fans, because it's not like the NBA draft, for example, and a lot of people, the NFL draft, where they know a lot of the players. And here it's a little bit some more obscure names for a lot of people, for a lot of Major League fans. And so that's sort of why Doug and I wanted to talk. And I'm going to just confess that I don't know a whole lot about these draftees. And I've read the coverage a little bit, and I've actually read everything Doug's written, so I probably do know more than the average. But I'm going to ask Doug to tell us about some of these guys, because I'm pretty excited about some of these. And what I'm really excited about is the name of some of these. I want to get into that later. The Reds picked some great names. But the first round, let's say this. The Reds' first round pick was Hunter Green, a 17-year-old right-handed pitcher / shortstop out of Sherman Oaks, California. And that was the number two overall pick. Is that the way you expected the draft to go before it started, that the Reds would get Green?
Yeah, it just seems that everybody in the know seemed to know that that was their guy if he was there, probably for the last month or so. Leading up to the draft, it seemed, at least until a couple of days ago, no one was really sure whether the Twins would select him or not and leave him there for the Reds. But the last couple of days right before the draft, it seems that the Twins had kind of made up their mind that they wanted to go with a different route. They didn't want to take the risk in drafting a high school right-handed pitcher number one overall, which has never happened in the history of the draft. And so they went a different route, and it left him sitting there for the Reds, who, by all reactions from the way that Dick Williams and Chris Buckley were speaking, if it hadn't been a for TV presentation and they had to wait the whole 5 minutes to make their pick, they would have sprinted up to the podium and handed off their pick. They seemed very, very excited that he was there for them.
Yeah, they were happy he landed in their lap, because it sounded to me, just listening to what they were saying, that they were really concerned that they wouldn't get him, and they were really, they weren't banking on that guy, but he was seemed to be number one on their draft board.
Yeah, and it's completely understandable. I mean, when you look at Hunter Green, you've got a guy who, everybody believes that he was a mid-first-round pick as a shortstop that no one even considered the idea of it actually happening because he's that good of a pitching prospect. The Reds love their athletes. Not that other teams don't love guys that are athletic, but, Hunter Green is just on a different kind of level than your general first-round prospect is in terms of athleticism. And so I think they were absolutely thrilled with the way that the draft played out for them.
And if you're not familiar with Hunter Green, I'm going to encourage you to go and read the recent Sports Illustrated profile. Hunter Green was actually a Sports Illustrated cover boy in the last month. And I think the headline on the front page, or on the cover of Sports Illustrated, was something to the effect of, this is the player that baseball needs. This is the guy that baseball needs as the face of their of the game in the future. That's pretty high praise for a 17-year-old high school senior. He was a high school senior at the time. Hadn't even been to his prom, I don't think, at that time. So, hey, that guy's a Red now.
Yeah, he's definitely gotten plenty of national attention for everything that he's done. And I guess when you throw 102 miles an hour, you're going to get some recognition. But I think that, to be perfectly fair to both Hunter Green and to the people listening, I think that it's a little bit over the top. I think that, people have called him the next LeBron James, the face of baseball. This is a 17-year-old baseball player. LeBron James was able to step into the NBA at 18 years old he was all-star caliber. He wasn't what he is today or has been the last couple of years, but, he was a very, very, very talented basketball player at 18 years old and able to play at the highest level. You're not going to see that with Hunter Green right now. He's still years and years away from being major league ready. So I think that, I don't want to say the hype is unwarranted, because I do think that he's a very talented baseball player, but just with the way that baseball develops guys and, they're not ready to step in right away, the expectations may be a little bit unfair for people who aren't as familiar with how the baseball draft and development program works.
I want to talk about the way Green's going to be, or is. You're talking about hype, and I want to talk about that just a moment. There's something you discussed about Hunter Green on your site, Reds Minor Leagues, and I encourage all of you to go out and read everything that Doug's written at RedsMinorLeagues.com about the draft. Extremely in-depth, great stuff, Doug. But you had a tweet from J.J. Cooper, Baseball America. And J.J. Cooper, a good guy, I like J.J., he says, he tweeted, "If you are a Reds fan, be thrilled. Green has an insanely electric arm. I think when he signs, he leaps over Nick Senzel as the team's number one prospect." I think you disagree with that, but that's the type of hype we're talking about.
Yeah, and I know JJ. We talk sometimes, and I tweeted back at him that I think he's crazy for saying that, although I can understand exactly where he's coming from. I'll put it out there right now that even though I have not updated my prospect rankings, and I won't until we get at least our first three draft picks signed, just because I don't want to have to go back and reinsert those guys, but I would like to wait for them to be officially Reds before tossing them in there, that Nick Senzel is going to be the Reds' top prospect when my new list comes out. There's just too much involved to put Hunter Green ahead of him right now. Let's be fair. Baseball America has Nick Senzel as the number six prospect in all of baseball right now. So it's not like Nick Senzel is just a good prospect. They're calling him, at least by what they're ranking him, an elite-level prospect, like one of the best prospects in all of baseball. I think that you're getting a little bit ahead of yourself to put a guy ahead of a guy like Nick Senzel who has not thrown a pitch as a professional yet. But that's just my opinion. I would probably say he's going to be the number two guy, but we'll kind of have to see once I get down to, going over everybody. There's a few guys that are in contention there, but definitely an elite-level prospect. it's just going to work out that he's not quite going to be ahead of Nick Senzel, at least on my list.
Well, I think all that's reasonable, but isn't the that kind of hype, that's based on the fact that, and you would even, I think you'd even say that even compared to Nick Senzel, that Green has by far the highest ceiling of anyone. And that's partially a function of the fact that he's so young and there's so much we don't know. We don't see how he's going to respond. But his ceiling is, right now as high as it gets.
Yeah, and you definitely have to weigh that in. As far as pitchers go, there's probably nobody in the system that has the ceiling that Hunter Green has. Definitely not position-wise. But with a 17-year-old pitcher, you've also got plenty of risk involved. Whereas I just don't see much risk involved with a guy like Nick Senzel. And I think that's really the overwhelming factor for having him ranked higher, without a doubt, in my mind right now.
I don't know what you're talking about risk, because I've never known any Reds pitchers to get hurt. I don't know why you'd think that there's any kind of a risk that Green might get hurt or not perform like we expect him to. We've not seen any of that lately out of young pitchers.
No. The Reds, they've got a great track record of keeping everybody healthy and performing at a very top level.
Exactly. Okay, so, you can make an argument as to, is this the guy the Reds should have taken? I don't think you can make an argument that it's a bad choice or that he's not a great prospect. And so, hey, that's a pretty big infusion of talent into the organization. So we'll have to wait and see how he performs. But so far, so good, I guess, after pick number one. Is that the way you felt?
Yeah, and I mean, I'll be perfectly honest with everybody listening. Hunter Green was not the guy that was number one on my draft board. And the guy that I did have number one was available for the Reds to take. I had Vanderbilt right-handed pitcher Kyle Wright ranked number one on my board. We talked about Hunter Green's upside, and I do think that he does have a little bit more upside than Kyle Wright does. But, Kyle Wright has, all-star level upside, and I think that he's just a safer kind of pick. The Reds chose to go with the upside, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's very little bit of a gap between the guys that were probably ranked 1 through 5 on my personal board. And as I've written many times, if Chris Buckley makes a first-round pick, whether I agree with it or not, I decide that Chris Buckley's right and I'm not. His track record since he took over as a scouting director in 2006 stacks up with anybody in Major League Baseball. And so I definitely put all of my faith into what he decides is the guy to go with. And, they went with Hunter Green, and until I see otherwise, they made the right pick.
Hunter Green wasn't even in the top three on my personal draft board, because the top two were both players from the University of Virginia, Pavin Smith and Adam Haseley. I can't believe the Reds didn't take either one of them, and so I'm a little disappointed.
Well, let's be fair. If they took Pavin Smith, where would he play?
He'll play wherever he wants to play. He's from the University of Virginia. He can do anything.
What position does he play, Chad?
He plays first base.
And who plays there for the Reds right now?
Scooter? I can't remember.
Some guy named Joey Votto.
Oh yeah, that's true.
He's good at baseball.
Okay, well, what about Adam Haseley?
I really do like Adam Haseley, and I think that he's going to be a very, very good major leaguer. I think that they would have been overdrafting him slightly at number two.
Sure,
but I would not have been surprised if he went in the top five. I do think that he's a very, very good future major league baseball player, and if somehow he had been taken by the Reds, I would not have been disappointed by that.
You're right. I'm just – that's sort of my role I play, is that I'm a illogical University of Virginia homer as an alum.
I get it. I've been there. It's beautiful.
But I've been watching those guys for the last 3 years, and really, Pavin Smith, who went number 7 to the Diamondbacks, and then Adam Haseley, who went number 8 to the Phillies, those guys are legit. I mean, those guys can play, and Haseley had a big win as a freshman starter in the College World Series that he'll always be remembered at UVA for. He as a freshman hadn't started in a month and got a surprise start and kept the in an elimination game in the College World Series and beat Vanderbilt. So, but anyway, that was an aside that nobody cares about. Hunter Green, I'm excited about it. A lot of Reds fans, I'd like to know your opinion. We're sort of hoping the Reds would go Brendan McKay, the first baseman slash pitcher from the University of Louisville, at number 2. Of course, he dropped to 4. What were your thoughts about whether the Reds should go for McKay?
I didn't really see it as a good fit for the Reds. As a first baseman,
We
were just talking about, where's he going to play? He's not going to play there. Nobody really seemed to be confident that he could move to a corner outfield spot. He's a very slow runner, and while that bat may play you're going to give up a lot of that back on defense if you try that. So that one just didn't make sense for me as a hitter. And as far as a pitcher goes, I wasn't sold that he was a number two caliber pitcher in the draft. Maybe I'm wrong. We'll find out eventually if that's true or not. I just didn't see it as far as him as being basically the top pitcher in the draft. There were just too many other guys that seemed to profile a little bit better. Now, I understand that a lot of people like the idea just because, one, he can be there quicker as a college player, and two, that, you know, in the National League, maybe you're able to take a little bit more advantage of his bat as a pitcher. You can kind of get that two-way thing kind of going, and he can provide that extra value there. At number two, that just didn't make sense for me. If they had been drafting a little bit further down in the top 10, you know, that's a guy that you can make a good argument for, but I just didn't see it that high up in the draft.
Hey, you know there were five Virginia guys taken in the top 10 rounds.
I did not know that, actually, Chad, but I'm glad that you shared it with me and all the listeners.
Yeah, now you know. The more you know. You're right. You're right about that. Sort of, maybe it makes sense, maybe it doesn't. One last thing about Hunter Green that I wanted to ask you, and I don't know if I read this or if I'm just making it up in my head or dreaming it, but did I see that there's some talk that the Reds may start Hunter Green as a pitcher and then let him be a designated hitter on days that he's not pitching?
You sort of saw something like that, yes. The word right now is that they're going to let him pitch, but they're also going to let him DH a few times a week. Like we said earlier, you know, mid-first round shortstop kind of guy. They're not going to let him play in the field. And I think that's a very smart move for them. You don't really want to risk him getting into some sort of collision at second base, you know, trying to turn a double play or something like that. It's just not worth it. But going back to kind of how we were just talking about with Brendan McKay, if you can keep his bat fresh, and in the lower minor leagues, you do not hit as a pitcher. It's not until you reach double A and triple A that the pitchers hit. And even then, they only hit in games when it's between two National League affiliates. So, you know, pitchers, that's one of the reasons pitchers don't hit very well in the major leagues. You know, the guys that could hit in college or in high school, they don't get to bat for quite a while, and they kind of lose that timing and that feel, you know, in your development because you're not hitting for several years as you work your way up. If you're going to be somebody who's as talented as Hunter Green is, you know, maybe it makes sense to get him, you know, 15 to 20 at-bats a week while also pitching. And then, you know, maybe you can have a Madison Bumgarner-type hitter to go along with what he can bring on the mound. You know, the top hitting pitchers each year are bringing an extra win and a half. And nobody really developed a pitcher who comes up hitting throughout the minor league. So if you can really do that and he can develop, you know, maybe you're getting two extra wins at the very top end of a pitcher who can really hit. So I really do like that plan, and I guess we'll kind of have to see how they stick with it over the years. This might just be something that they're letting him do right now, you know, just because he wants to, and they're just willing to give that concession right now, and then they'll just tell him, you know, hey, we want you to stick with pitching next year. We have seen that happen a few different times through over the years with other teams and organizations, but you know, it would not surprise me if it's kind of a long-term plan that the Reds were looking at, setting course for with Hunter Green, especially if he hits well this year.
Yeah, there's no reason not to keep the bat in his hand, as far as I can tell right now. You know, what's it going to hurt? And I agree with not having him in the field if he's pitching, because you know that's a different animal. You know, you don't necessarily want him throwing even from shortstop to first the day after he starts, etc. But I think it's interesting. I'll be looking forward to seeing how that goes. So now the last question about Hunter Green. I think we can go ahead and pencil him in for next year's starting rotation in Cincinnati.
I mean, you can try and pencil it in all you want, but I have a feeling that, you know, Dick Williams probably isn't going to let that one happen. But I hear you guys are good buddies and you hang out at the University of Virginia together. You know, you party, all this stuff. So, you know, maybe you can talk to him about it.
Yeah, I think I'll do that at our next little alumni party. Absolutely. Okay, Hunter Green, I guess you may not be next year's starting rotation. So, Asher Wojciechowski, that's another spot that you can try to win. Let's move on to the Reds. They had a competitive balance first-round pick. It was number 32 overall, and this is the first of the great names that the Reds drafted. A shortstop from out of Miami, Florida, Jeter Downs. And good little story behind him and great name. Tell us a little bit about Jeter Downs.
Well, the name stands out immediately, and yes, he was named after Derek Jeter.
So he's a shortstop named after Derek Jeter. You can tell his dad wanted a shortstop from the day he was born.
Well, what's funny is that it was actually his mother who was the Derek Jeter.
There you go.
The Derek Jeter fan. His father His father was a huge Boston Red Sox fan. So reading some of the stories with that was pretty interesting. But
is his middle name Nomar?
You know, I don't know, but I would really doubt it.
That'd be great.
I hope so, though. I really hope so.
But can he play? It sounds like he's polished with his bat more so than in the field. Is that true?
Well, I don't want to say he's not polished in the field. He's well known for his good glove work, and he's got a strong arm. I think that it's more the range that's the issue with him, that, you know, scouts believe that maybe he'll wind up at second base rather than sticking at shortstop in the long term. But right now, he can play shortstop. It's just whether he fills out anymore as he continues to, you know, grow. He's, you know, just coming out of high school, so there's always the chance that if you put on, you know, 10, 15 pounds of, you know, good weight over the years, you're going to lose that half a step that you may need at shortstop.
Hold on. I'm sorry. I've got to interrupt. You're telling me that a shortstop named after Derek Jeter may not have quite enough range to play shortstop in the major leagues. Is that what you're telling me?
I am, and we can make jokes about that all day long if we want to.
Because Jeter had no – I know there are Jeter fans out there, whatever. I'm sorry, but that guy had no range whatsoever. He was the most overrated shortstop in baseball. But anyway, okay, go ahead. We're not here to down Jeter. We're here to talk about Jeter Downs.
Yes. Jeter Downs, though, like you said, he's well known for the advancedness of his bat for a high school hitter. You know, Chris Buckley, he kept talking about how mature he was in his approach. He compared him to college hitters as far as, you know, how advanced he is, which you don't see too often for guys coming out of high school. You know, they just don't have the experience. But, you know, the Reds really, really like this kid's bat. You know, he's got above average power potential. You know, you might get 20 plus home runs out of him in the future. You can use the whole field. There's a lot to like there. He's very athletic. The really only question is, can he stick at shortstop in the long term? And we're just going to have to wait and find out because, you know, like I said, it's going to depend on exactly how he fills out his frame over the next couple of years.
Well, if he can stick at shortstop and the bat plays, all of a sudden you're talking about, hey, you can see why he's picked so highly in the draft. And you talk about maturity as well. He's going to turn 19 already this summer for a high school guy. I mean, Hunter Green's just 17, right?
Yeah, Hunter Green is definitely one of the youngest guys in the draft class from the high school. Well, I guess you're not going to find any 17-year-olds coming from the college class. But, yeah, Jeter Downs is one of the older guys in the high school class. So, you know, that definitely comes into play a little bit when you talk about his maturity. But even so, you know, it just seems that everywhere you read, you know, he was getting high praise for how mature he was, both on and off the field. You know, that might have a little bit to do with the fact that he's a little bit older, but, you know, it's not like we're talking about a guy who's 27 years old versus a guy who's 17 or 18 years old either.
Exactly. Now, a little bit of an interesting strategy. I want to get your take on it. The Reds took high school guys, first two guys, some guys with high upside, but again, there's a little more risk with those high school guys, as you note. Were you a little surprised by that? Because that's not always been the Reds' strategy.
Not really. If they had taken two high school pitchers back-to-back, that would have been a thing where I've been like, okay, that's really risky. But taking high school shortstops isn't nearly – it's not all that risky, especially early on in the draft. You know, generally speaking, you know, high school shortstops, they don't stick at shortstop in the long term, but they generally hit well enough that they can slide over to third base or second base or center field, you know, as long as the bat plays. And, you know, you're at this point, you're just going for the best player available. You know, I guess unless it's a first baseman, because they're not going to take a first baseman anywhere early in the draft because, you know, that Joey Votto guy is still there for 7 years.
He's all right. Signability issues with either of these top two guys?
No, and we'll talk about that real quick. A couple of years ago, Major League Baseball set up what they call draft pools. And basically every team gets slot value money that they're allowed to spend. And they're not given this money by Major League Baseball. They're just given the amount that they're allowed to spend for the first 10 rounds. And you cannot go over that amount by more than 5%. If you go over by 5%, you give up your first round draft pick the next year. Nobody's ever done that, and it's never going to happen. Teams value that way, way too much. But because they've gone to this slotting system and you have to stick within your budget, teams know what it's going to take to sign these guys. Last year, there were only two picks – in the top 10 rounds from all major league teams that did not sign. And funny enough, the Reds actually drafted one of those guys this year, and he has said that he plans on signing, so that's good to hear. But I'd be very, very surprised if the Reds weren't able to sign somebody within the top 10 rounds. You know, they go into this knowing what it's going to take to get these guys into the organization, because if you don't sign them, you lose that value money, which, you know, for, you know, the top couple of rounds, we're talking millions of dollars that you can't spend elsewhere, even if you're willing to. So I don't think that any of these guys are going to not sign. And the signing date this year has actually been moved up to July 7th, which that's just over 3 weeks away.
Yeah, that's soon.
So, you know, there's not much time for negotiations anymore. It used to be as late as the third week of August that you had to sign these guys. And so they've really pushed that forward this year, and teams kind of have a general idea of what it's going to take, and there's just not too many negotiations that go on anymore. It seems that both sides know, you know, what it's going to take, and they're kind of all on the same page with that.
Well, that's interesting. Both these guys start at Billings, you think? Or,
you know, I would be very surprised if Hunter Green started in Billings.
Send him to Florida?
I think that
or Arizona?
They're in Arizona, yeah. I think that the reason being is Hunter Green hasn't pitched since April, early April. So it's going to take him some time to kind of get back into the groove of things, and it's a much easier situation to put him into in Arizona. There's no crowds. You know, the rosters are very big. There's not any pressure to really, you know, when you can have it, just go out there and get your work in, you know, those first few times out. I do think there's a chance we'll see him in Billings at some point during the season, but I'd be very surprised if it wasn't in Arizona where he started his career.
Okay. I'm not sure how you pronounce this game, but this Phil Razor guy on Twitter, can you tell him to leave us alone? At PSR 1973.
Phil, you got to stop.
Oh, my goodness. He's wearing me out. Not really. Not really. Love you, Phil.
Stick to your cats, Phil.
Okay, so Hunter Green, Jeter Downs, you know, that's if you're a Reds fan, you know, I'm sure everybody's excited about their first two picks, but not a whole lot you can say bad about these two, I wouldn't think, right?
No, I'm thrilled with the way that the first two guys they took worked out. You know, I'm a big guy in terms of athleticism and up the middle guys. So when you grab a shortstop that's very athletic, I'm all in. I'm all in.
The next guy, second round pick, their third pick overall, but the second round pick and the number 38 overall pick. Now, you know, I said a moment ago. Again, I'm gonna have to harp on this a little bit. The Reds didn't take any University of Virginia guys. Dick Williams, what are you doing, buddy? But they did take a guy from the Atlantic Coast Conference, and that's Wake Forest outfielder Stuart Fairchild. And I've actually seen him play a little bit. He had a pretty monster junior season this year. The power really, really showed up for the first time. You know, he had .359, .438 on base. Hit 15 home run or 17 home runs after having only 10 combined in his first two seasons. What are your thoughts about Stuart Fairchild?
Well, according to all the reports, he can stick in center field, and if you're going to get that kind of power out of a center fielder, that's really, really big. You know, there's not too many 20 plus home run guys that can really play center field in the major leagues these days, and you know, if the reports are true that he can stick in center field and be a quality defender, not just, you know, your fringe average kind of guy who, you know, you don't really want to be out there, but you're willing to accept it because he can hit, we're talking about a potential all-star kind of guy. You know, I think that, you know, the big question is going to be more so about, you know, one, is he going to be able to play center field if, you know, your favorite player, Billy Hamblin, is still here. But even if that works out to be the case that, you know, there's not a spot open for him, that power is going to play in one of the corners too. Now, again, whether that position's open or not, we don't know, but the bat definitely is one that will play anywhere in the outfield, and as a center fielder, you really hope that, you know, you can get the most out of that bat at that position.
Sure, and if he hits, as you said, if he hits, they'll find a place for him. It's, you know, but you're right. Go ahead.
Well, and if not, they can always use him as a trade guy that, you know, can bring in something that they do need that maybe they don't have.
Sure.
You know, we've seen that in the past when they traded for Matt Latos. They used guys that, you know, were blocked by other young, very good players, and they acquired what they needed.
And that's an interesting point, because these guys are, we were talking about, oh, where are they going to play on the Reds in a few years? But also, the hope is that the Reds are about to turn the corner here on this rebuild, and maybe by the time he's getting close, he might be a trade chip that they can fill in some of the holes on the Major League roster. All these guys, not just him, I'm not suggesting Fairchild specifically, but any of these guys are major assets that the Reds can use to help, even if they're not the actual person helping the Major League team. They're assets that can be used to help improve the big league club. So this sort of infusion of talent is good. And I love the idea of a center fielder that can hit with power. You know, I am a Billy Hamilton acolyte, but if a center fielder, if he can stick in center field and the power is real, and from what I read, people think the power is real, then that is a pretty interesting player.
Yeah, and, you know, whether you want to hear it or not, Chad, Billy Hamilton is going to be a free agent at some point in his career. So, you know, while the Reds probably want to bring him back, it's not directly up to them. So, you know, we may need a guy like Stuart Fairchild to step in for Billy Hamilton one of these days.
All right, yeah. No question. Now, what about you noted at your site, and again, everybody go check out everything Doug wrote. We're talking about these guys, but he goes way more in-depth at RedsMinorLeagues.com. About these guys. You noted some concerns about plate discipline. I mean, he had a .438 on base percentage, but his walks dropped this year. Plate discipline concerns?
I do think there's a little bit of a concern there, but, you know, as I noted on the site, when in 2016, his walk to strikeout ratio was nearly 1-to-1. And that's generally the line that I want to see from, you know, guys that are considered top college hitters. College baseball is a lot different than professional baseball. You're not seeing guys that are going to pitch, even professionally at the lowest levels every day when you take the field in college. And so I always want to see guys that are walking nearly as much as they're striking out in college. And while that didn't happen in 2017, it did happen in 2016. So I don't think it's a huge concern, but if there were one thing I'd have to say to watch with Stuart Fairchild moving forward, it would be, you know, the plate discipline. Just keep an eye on it. Scouting report wise, there doesn't seem to be scouts out there saying, you know, he can't hit a breaking ball or he's fooled on every changeup he's ever seen. So that's good. But he did only walk 29 times with 49 strikeouts this year. And that's not really a ratio that I'd be thrilled about from a college guy. But, you know, he was much better in 2016. So I don't think it's a huge concern, but definitely something I will be keeping an eye on.
Yeah, bears watching. So but I'm excited about the possibilities that are inherent in what Stuart Fairchild could be and hopefully will be. So, you know, the Reds had three of the top 38 picks, and after day one of the draft, I think that was where we stood. After day one, what was your sense of how the Reds had done comparatively compared to everyone else in the league so far after day one?
I loved it. They got two guys that can play up the middle that have five tool abilities, and then they got who everybody thought was the number one player in the country, and Hunter Green. It's tough to beat that. And, you know, whether we want to believe it or not, and I think that a lot of people do have problems grasping just how tough it is to turn draft picks into major leaguers, the large, overwhelming majority of your major leaguers are going to be first or second round guys. And so when you look at how good a draft is, usually you're pretty much looking at your first and second round guys. Every so often you're going to see, you know, guys drafted in the third, fourth, fifth rounds turn into guys, but it usually doesn't happen. So, you know, day one, A+ from me, and, you know, hopefully they'll get more out of the draft than just the day one guys, but if that's all they get, I really like what they did.
Yeah, and that's the benefit of having the high draft picks and having three picks so early, top 38, because you're right. I mean, everybody says that the draft is a crapshoot, and in some ways it is. But on the other hand, most of your top guys are those first two rounds. I mean, people are going to make the major leagues from every round, but it certainly is diminishing returns the further you go. So it looked to me like just a sort of an observer from the outside that, wow, that looks like a pretty good infusion of talent in the organization, and pretty exciting, I think. Let's talk about the rest of the top five rounds, and then we're going to start sort of pick and choose where we go after that. Third round, the Reds got number 77 overall. The Reds got Jacob Heatherly, another high school pitcher. This one a lefty out of Alabama. What do we know about Jacob Heatherly?
Well, what's interesting about Jacob Heatherly is that he's the highest left-handed pitcher that Chris Buckley's ever taken since he took over the draft for the Reds in 2006.
What do you mean by he's the highest? Do we have concerns about drug tests?
No, we do not. But the Reds have actually only drafted two left-handed pitchers since 2006 in the top 100 picks in the entire draft.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and the other one was Donnie Joseph, who was a relief pitcher, who had incredible stuff, but you know, could not locate his breaking ball for strikes. And once he got to the upper minor leagues, that wasn't going to work against guys, and he never really made the adjustment. But you know, Jacob Heatherly's a starting pitcher. You know, I think that, you know, as far as all the good things that he does, he's got a chance to be a middle of the rotation kind of guy. You know, lefty who's 89 to 92, he can touch 95 with the pitch. You know, he throws two different versions of a curveball, one harder with, you know, shorter breaking action to it, one kind of a big slow looping pitch in the low 70s. And then, you know, he's got a changeup that he doesn't use too much right now, which that's generally what you're going to see with high school pitchers because they don't really need it against high school competition, so they don't throw it too much. But, you know, three-pitch guy, I guess four-pitch if you want to count both versions of his curveball. You know, he's got good size. He's already 6'1", 215 pounds, which means there might not be too much for him to, you know, grow into. You know, velocity's probably not going to pick up 4 or 5 miles an hour like you might see with some guys who are, you know, tall but skinny and have, you know, room to fill out. He's probably filled out pretty much at this point. But
again, already 19 years old, one of the older players, high school players in the draft.
Yes. And I think that actually plays into, you know, some benefit for the Reds because he's going to be more advanced when he comes into professional baseball. And maybe you can push him a little bit harder than you would, you know, definitely would than a guy like Hunter Green, who maybe you want to, you know, be a little bit more cautious with his arm just because there's more growing into it, so to speak. But yeah, I really like Heatherly. If he signs quickly, it wouldn't surprise me if he went to Billings right out of the gate. But I guess it really does just come down to how long it takes for him to sign.
He's you mentioned that he may not have had to use the changeup much in high school because he didn't need it, and that brings me to one of my favorite things here. Looks like he had a 1.11 ERA during his senior season of high school, 69.2 innings, so 69 innings and 116 strikeouts. Hey, that's not bad.
That's not bad. Now, to be fair, he also walked 39 batters in those 69.2 innings. And for a high school guy, that's a lot because realistically, you should be dominating other high school hitters if you're going to be, you know, a Major League Baseball prospect. And so I think that's going to be something that, you know, the Reds are going to have to work with him on. And I'm not sure if it's, you know, a mechanical thing that they need to work on with him or, you know, maybe it's just a concentration thing. I'm not sure. But if there is something to watch with Heatherly, that would be what I'd keep an eye on.
Fourth round, the Reds picked a guy that has a first-round name, my favorite name in this draft. Shortstop out of Orlando, Florida, Cash Case. What a great name. Is he a great player as well as a great name?
Well, it's going to be tough to find a better name than that, to be honest.
It's fantastic. It's just,
there were so many, you know, tweets going around just with, you know, suitcases full of cash, and it was good. It was really good for about 15 minutes on Twitter on draft day.
It's a name that's emoji ready.
Yes, it is. but as far as the player goes, you know, another one of these guys who he's going to start off at shortstop in the minor leagues, but he's probably going to slide over to second or third base. Fortunately, that's fine. You know, he's not a light hitting shortstop. Definitely a bat first guy. Very short, compact swing. 15 to 20 home run power in the future. He's got a chance to hit for a good average as well. You know, I one of the guys that I really like on as far as scouting services go is Frankie Pilliere, and I swear if I'm messing up his name, I'm sorry. But he's a former big league scout, and now he writes all over the place. But, you know, he really, really likes this kid, and he says he's really going to hit. So I'll take his word for it. I've seen some video. I really liked what I saw. I think this guy could be a steal in the fourth round. I really do.
That's fantastic. And an interesting note that you had on your site there, RedsMinorLeagues.com, that from Chris Buckley, which is that best buddies with Jesse Winker?
Yeah, they're apparently, Jesse's not from there, but Jesse, his family lives there, and he lives there in the offseason. They're from the same area, and so apparently they're good buddies. And if you're going to learn hitting from a minor league guy, Jesse Winker is definitely not one of the worst guys to be friends with.
Well, in terms of plate approach, that's a fact. So, very interesting. Cash Case, my new favorite name in the Cincinnati Reds organization. Cash Case. I just like saying it. I'm going to say it again, Doug.
Go for it.
Cash Case. Oh, it's
just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
It's glorious. It's just glorious. Now, a name that's not doesn't roll off the tongue. As a matter of fact, I don't know how to pronounce it. I'm going to let you pronounce the Cincinnati Reds' fifth-round draft pick, their first college pitcher of the draft, out of southeastern Louisiana.
Max Soroller.
Oh, Max Soroller. That's like sounds like one word. Max Soroller.
It definitely blends together, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't like it. But I like the player. He looks like a scouting report. Big, tall guy. Possible future starter?
Yeah, I think so. Now, we're probably talking more, you know, number four kind of guy at this point. But, you know, he works in the low 90s and he can touch 95. Very good changeup. You know, some scouts have called it a pus pitch. And so, you know, we're talking about a major league put away pitch with a changeup. So, you know, definitely got the first two pitches in terms of, you know, pure scouting to go as a starter. But he also throws a slider and a curveball. Probably going to have to, you know, figure out which one works best. There aren't too many guys out there in the major leagues that are throwing both a curveball and a slider. Maybe he can be that kind of guy. But, yeah, I mean, he was pretty good in college. He had 110 strikeouts this year and 101 and two-thirds innings. He only walked 34 guys. Good control. You know, there's not much to dislike here.
You know, starting with Max Soroller, I love it. Actually, I don't, but starting the fifth round, looks like the Reds went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 out of the next six rounds, college pitchers. All right.
Yeah, kind of getting back to, you know, the whole draft pool thing that we talked about earlier, it seems like most teams starting in the sixth or seventh round kind of went college heavy as far as players go and more so college seniors because they'll sign for significantly less money than their slot value is, and that'll give the teams more money to work with. Now, I think it's a very unfair system, but it is what it is at this point.
Okay, now, starting at with fifth round and below, who are some guys that you, because we can't go through, we don't have time to go through all of these guys, but who are some guys that you want, think need to be highlighted that you think are interesting selections?
Well, I want to start off with someone that you mentioned on Twitter that you wanted to talk about.
Oh, gosh. A great name. Another great name, but I'm mad that they selected him.
ninth rounder, left-handed pitcher named Packy Naughton.
Packy Naughton.
And where did he go to school at, Chad?
Well, it's almost a college. It's Virginia Polytechnic Institute and State University, also known as Virginia Tech.
Yes, good old Virginia Tech.
Let me ask you this. You're getting ready to talk about his college career, but do you know whether he majored in poultry science or animal husbandry?
I do not know.
Okay.
I'm going to guess that he did not, I cannot confirm that.
Those are Virginia Tech majors. That's all I'm saying. okay, Packy Naughton, great name. Not Cash Case, but it's right up there. I was, jokes about Virginia Tech aside, I was really, not surprised, but it was interesting because his college numbers were just bad.
Yeah, you know, you look at his college numbers, and I mean, I'll be honest, his ERAs are not good. In 2015, it was 4.91, and that was easily the best year that he had. You know, in 2016, it was 6.75, and this year it was 6.24. Not very good at keeping runs off the board. Now, on the flip side, he misses bats, so that's good. You know, he's a left-hander who can touch 95. And he sits in the low 90s. You know, he's got a breaking ball. He's got a changeup. I wouldn't surprise me if he started in the minor leagues for a little bit. But everything about him, it just screams, you know, reliever in the future. And so, you know, maybe it's one of those off-speed pitches that's kind of been the problem for him in college. And has led to him being hit around a little bit and focusing on one of those pitches rather than both of them. That can be that really can be a big difference in, you know, getting hit around a lot and having success. So, you know, you're not going to find too many lefties throwing 95 in the ninth round. You know, bad numbers or not, ninth rounders, you know, if they reach double A, it's a successful pick. So, you know, if you can find a left-handed pitcher that can throw 95 in the ninth round, take them and see what you can do. You know, hope that your development staff can work with them and, you know, find that one thing that makes a little bit of a difference.
Well, and that's what Chris Buckley said. He's a left-handed pitcher with an above-average arm, and they're just hard to find. So,
and like I said, I trust Chris Buckley. He knows what he's doing. So,
and Buckley we trust.
That's right.
All right. Who else do you want to highlight? Who are the other interesting names?
No. Now, after the 10th round, that's kind of where the draft pool thing really comes into play, because teams can't just spend whatever they want. You get up to $125,000 to spend before it counts against your first 10-round pool. Anything you spend over that does count towards that. And so here's where you'll see mostly high school guys taken that were ranked much higher than where they got selected. One of those guys is 11th rounder, Tommy Mace. He's a right-handed pitcher. 6'7", 200 pounds. He was rated as high as a late second-round pick by some places. He throws 92 to 94 right now, and at that size, there's plenty of room for projection that he could pick up velocity as he fills out. Probably going to be a tough sign, but maybe the Reds can find the kind of money, and if they can, he would be a huge, huge pickup for the team if they could make that happen. I'm not expecting it to, but at the 11th round, it wouldn't surprise me if they kind of had already talked to him and had a general idea of what he wanted. Don't be surprised if he is a guy who gets, $600,000, $700,000 in the 11th round, and, they're able to bring him in.
6'7", wow.
Yeah, he's a tall one, let me tell you. Now, there's another really interesting guy. They took him in the 15th round, an outfielder named Nate Scantlin, and he has apparently agreed to sign already. He'll have to go out to Arizona and pass his physical before it's official, but he's told local papers that he is going to sign. He's a toolsy outfielder that they were able to pick up in the 15th round, so I just think that that's definitely somebody that will be worth following, and we know that he's going to sign, assuming there's nothing wrong medically that no one knows about at this point. So he's definitely a guy that is going to be in the Reds organization. And then we've got a guy in the 17th round named Junior Harding. Now, he's really interesting because he did not pitch at all in 2016 after an absolute dominant 2015 season. He battled ulcerative colitis, which if you're not familiar with that, just Google it. It's a mess. It's an intestinal kind of problem, and he lost a whole bunch of weight, missed the whole season, but he came back and he pitched okay last year. But I think there's some real upside with him, and he said that he plans on signing with the Reds. He's been up to 97 out of the bullpen, although he's been a starter in college for the most part. We're talking about a big-time arm strength guy, good curveball. I think that he could be a very, very good pickup in the 17th round. And the Reds have had some okay luck in the 17th round. That's where they drafted Chris Heisey once upon a time, and he turned into a pretty good big leaguer, so maybe they'll strike gold in the 17th round again this year.
Yeah, dare to dream. Another interesting name is one in the 29th round, and I don't want to skip over anybody you want to talk about, but outfielder A.J. Bumpus from the University of Cincinnati. Draft-eligible sophomore? What do you think? Is he the local kid, so that's the reason I ask.
Yeah, draft eligible sophomore because he'll. I'm not sure if he's 21. Yeah. He just turned 21 at the end of May. If you're 21 within, I want to say 3 weeks after the draft as a sophomore, you are draft eligible as a sophomore. Otherwise, you have to be a junior. So he's one of the older sophomores in the class. What I really liked about him is that he had big time strikeout problems as a freshman last year. He really cut down his strikeout rate this year. Hit for more power. I mean, he hit better across the board. You really like seeing those guys that take that big step after their first year of college baseball. I'm not sure if he's going to sign or not. We'll kind of have to wait and see. He's got some leverage there in being a 29th rounder. I probably wouldn't sign unless they threw a lot of money at me because you can always go back for your junior year and try and improve your stock. But as a local guy, I really hope that he gets signed because I think those make really good stories. And I really do like the improvements that he showed from his first year to his second year.
Okay, before we try to sort of sum up the entire draft from the Reds' perspective, I do want to try to do that before we sign off here, any other names that you think Reds fans need to be keeping an eye on out of this draft?
I think that the one other guy that we would really like to grab, local Ohio kid, high schooler, left-hander, Seth Lonsway. He was ranked as the 127th player in the country by Baseball America. So we're talking somewhere in the third, fourth, fifth round kind of talent that they got in the 19th round. Again, another guy I think is going to be a tough sign, but you know, if they can find a couple hundred thousand extra dollars to throw his way, would definitely be a big steal in the 19th round.
Yeah, yeah, if they can get a player in the 19th round, it's fantastic. That's interesting. Now let's take a step back. Okay, the draft is over. You've seen who the Reds took. Do you have a sense right now, and what are people saying about how this Reds draft compares to other teams' drafts? You know, last year they had sort of the consensus best draft of anyone in baseball. How does it rank this year?
As far as the national media is concerned, they're pretty much saying the same thing this year. The Reds hit an absolute home run. John Heyman of FanRag Sports actually had a quote from a rival executive earlier today that said, you know, the Cincinnati Reds won the draft by far. He went on to say that it must be bad scouting by other organizations for the reasons that the Reds got the kind of haul that they did, that stars just kept falling into their lap. You know, we talked about those guys they took on the first day, and, you know, we're talking three possible all-stars that the Reds got on day one. I mean, that you don't see things like that. So I think the Reds did great. It seems that the general consensus around the country is that the Reds did great. And here we've got another front office executive talking about the Reds possibly getting three all-stars on the first day. So I it's not just me wearing my, you know, rose-colored glasses. It seems that everybody is really, really a fan of how things played out for the Reds.
Doug, are those Pete Rose-colored glasses?
No, they are not.
Okay, now, the next question for you here, before I give you a chance to give us your overarching thoughts. Which of these guys is going to be the first one to make it to the big leagues?
Oh, that's a tough question. If I had to put money down on it, I would probably say Stuart Fairchild. But it wouldn't surprise me if it were one of the college pitchers they took, possibly getting there as a reliever, somebody that they could move along pretty quickly. But I'm not sure that I could pinpoint who that guy is right now.
Well, you're wrong. The answer is the first player to make it to the major leagues out of this draft is either going to be Cash Case or Packy Naughton, one or the other. So I'm sorry, you missed that one, Doug.
We'll have to revisit this one in about a year and a half, 2 years, and see exactly how right you were and how wrong that I was.
All right, well, yeah, it's being recorded for posterity. What are your overall thoughts about the draft that you haven't? Anything you haven't said any before? Anything you want to just sort of add as we put a finishing touches on this podcast?
I mean, I believe they did very well, and obviously, it's going to come down to whether or not they can get everybody signed. I don't think they're going to get or miss out on anybody they took in the top two or three rounds. And so, you know, that's really the basis of what your draft is going to be graded on for quite a while. Now, some of the guys that we talked about in the latter half of the podcast here, if they can bring any of those guys on, I mean, it's absolute icing on the cake, but it really would be that extra little benefit that you kind of really pushes it from, you know, an A to a total A-plus grand slam walk-off Adam Dunn against the Indians kind of, you know, feeling for this draft.
Yeah, it's too early to draw any grand conclusions, but certainly for the second straight year, you got to feel pretty good about the talent that the Reds are able to continue to add, and this, you know, hopefully is the last year they're picking number two. I hope we're moving a little bit forward. So you got to think the Reds, seems like they've taken advantage of their opportunities over the last couple years to draft highly, and because that doesn't come around that often, and so yeah, I feel good about it. But what do I know?
You know a lot, Chad.
Oh,
you
man,
know
that's,
a lot.
That's actually very true. I'm the best.
You are the best. You are absolutely the best.
Oh man, I'm glad someone finally has agreed with me on that. Doug, appreciate it. This is always fun. Appreciate you guys listening to us ramble on about the Reds and taking time out of your day to download us, listen to the podcast, episode number 172. It's crazy. I do encourage you to subscribe if you're not already. You can get us on iTunes. You can find us at the Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher. You can find us just about anywhere you find your podcasts. Download us. Give us a review and a rating at any of those places wherever you get your podcast. It does help other people find us. Also, if you like us, tell your friends. If you don't like us, as I always say, keep your mouth shut. You can find Doug on Twitter at DougDirt24. That's right, didn't it? Is that right?
That is correct.
DougDirt24. You think I'd have that memorized? You can find me at Dotson C. You can find us at Red Leg Nation. anytime. You can find Doug every single day at redsminorleagues.com. I encourage you to check that out. And you can also find Doug at least once a week at redlegnation.com. And we're following the Cincinnati Reds, the Major League version mostly, at redlegnation.com every single day. Doug, always great talking to you. Appreciate it, buddy.
Well, I really appreciate you as well, Chad, and thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. We're going to do it again very, very soon. For Doug Gray, this is Chad Dotson saying so long, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Red Leg Nation Radio from RedLegNation.com. Subscribe to Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app. And join us for discussion of all things Reds at RedLegNation.com. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.